I wanted to. All I had to do was mention the code word rainbow to my mother, Councilwoman Isabel, and she would force Khan to give me back by holding back the boys that the Northlands depended on. Just knowing that I had a way out had given me the strength to focus on projects that could change the course of our nations. The school project was my baby. But I had hurt Khan, and he had hurt me. For weeks, my curiosity had played tricks on me, and tonight he had pushed me to give in. It had gone from a first real kiss to intercourse so incredibly fast, and before I knew it, it had been over. With desperation, Khan had begged me and flattered me by his raw desire, and high on my own arousal, I had let him. It had felt good, until it didn't. The moment he pulled out, I knew we had made a mistake. Our relationship was already complicated, and the expression on his face spoke of deep regret. I was hurt, and mad at myself for letting it go too far. It didn't get any better with his prodding questions about my sex life and provoked by his judgmental comment that he wanted me to be an innocent. I had exaggerated and made the one time I'd been in a sex club sound like something I had repeated several times. In reality, my life hadn't been very exciting when it came to sex. There had been one man, and it had been awkward and easily forgotten. At least with Khan, I had felt aroused.
"Were they better than me?"
Khan had asked, and I had stabbed him with my answer that it was hard to say, since he'd come so quickly. I was no expert on men, but it didn't take much empathy to know that was a hurtful statement. One that he had reciprocated by telling me that he would prefer a sex bot over a stiff board like me any day. No more words had been spoken. I was left with a bleeding heart and leaking eyes that wouldn't stop watering. Maybe he was right. Maybe I was a lousy bed partner. He had told me I wasn't his type before, but I'd never asked him what his type was. It doesn't matter, I told myself. I've been chosen to serve my people, and there is no room for vanity, pride, or sexual longings in a councilwoman's life anyway. I used the soft cover to dry away my silent tears, erasing the proof that despite being a chosen one, I was only human, and deeply hurting.
Khan. If my short-lived romance with Pearl had been a chess game, then I had lost because of my lack of patience. Like a goddamn rookie, I had gone straight for the queen and been wiped out immediately. Yesterday, she had been smiling and talking with Boulder all day. But he was gone now, and she hadn't spoken a word to me since we woke. She conversed politely with the people we visited, and gracefully addressed the endless questions she was asked with that annoying soft-spoken tone she had used when she first arrived. It made me realize just how much she had conformed to my world in our 2 months together. But Pearl was done conforming, and it was my own fault. I had pushed her too far, and yet I would have to push her again to break the awkward silence between us. I used a dirty trick that I knew would work. "Finn, can you take us to that town you talked about, the one that almost burned down last year? I want to see how far they've come in rebuilding their lives." "Okay, you want to stop there?" Finn asked from the drone in front of us. "No, we'll just pass through." I ended the transmission on my wristband and sank back in the luxurious drone that had taken us from the west coast to the east coast in 3 hours the other day and was now chauffeuring us around. I preferred to have Magni in a separate drone from Pearl, although during this trip he had kept sober and seemed to be returning to his normal self. 10 minutes later, we flew into one of the poorest cities in the Northlands. Pearl raised a hand to her chest as if hit by the heavy depression that filled this town. Even I felt the heavy energy as we slowly hovered by houses with broken windows and blackened facades. Some of them were covered with numbers and writing.
"What does the writing mean?" Pearl whispered.
"When the fire consumed this city, they summed up how many men lived in each house and how many died in the fire."
"That many?"
Her voice broke. "The writing tells if the house is livable or vacated for safety reasons." She was quiet, her eyes full of tears, as we stopped in front of a group of men blocking the way.
They had burn marks, and one was missing a leg. But the worst part was how dead their eyes were, like nothing mattered anymore. They looked disheveled and severely underweight.
"We have to stop and help them," she said without looking at me.
"With what? We didn't bring any food."
"Then we must come back. Today."
This time she was pleading, her eyes moist. "Maybe if we have time on our way back," I said, and called up Finn again. "I've seen enough. Time to go to Zobel. He should have dinner ready for us."
"Got it," Finn said unemotionally, and took us out of there, our drone linked to his.
Pearl sat quietly with her hands in her lap, looking sad but beautiful in her long white dress. Her blonde hair fell down her shoulders, and she wore earrings in the same blue color as her eyes.
"Zobel is a nice guy. You'll like him. He owns this city and the mines where the men work."
Pearl turned her head and looked away, not yet taking my bait, but I knew she soon would.
"Welcome, my friends."
Zobel stood ready when we arrived. Like a king of the Ontario area, he had built himself a castle, bigger and better than my gray manor. Zobel had been my father's closest friend, and the old man was no threat to my position. He was more like a greedy squirrel, gathering riches for a long and hard winter, a collector of luxurious drones, art, sculptures, and anything else that was hard and expensive to obtain, including my mother, who stayed with him more often than not. He had asked for my permission to marry her, and I was still considering it. The man was a fool, and letting her spend time with him was my way of letting her discover it for herself before binding herself to him. My mother was delighted that we'd come, and when I introduced Zobel to Pearl, he almost licked his lips at the rare pleasure of meeting someone so refined. Yes, Zobel knew a treasure when he saw one. Dinner was served in a room more opulent than my personal suite. Gold, marble, and intricate craftsmanship combined with the newest technology impressed all the guests, but Pearl looked almost disgusted.
"I'm so excited to meet a member of the council," Zobel said and smiled widely at Pearl.
Being around 70, he was at least 15 years older than my mom, and the same age as my father would have been if he had been alive. Zobel was no longer the handsome man he had once been, and he looked weaker than when I last saw him 4 months ago.
"Not to mention the privilege of having two women at my table again," Zobel pointed to a large painting. "My wife, Maria, died 6 years ago." He drew in a heavy sigh. "I miss her terribly, but at least Erica has been kind enough to visit me often."
His smile to my mother was so loving that I had to look away.
"Do you have children?"
Pearl asked politely, albeit stiffly.
"Yes, yes, I am the proud father of 3 daughters and a son. Unfortunately, my son was killed many years ago in a tournament."
"I'm sorry to hear that," Pearl said with sympathy. "That must have been very hard on you."
"Yes, it was." He threw his hands out. "Now Peter won't be here to claim his heritage."
"So what happens to it then?" Pearl leaned forward. "I don't mean to pry, I'm just trying to understand how your customs work."
"I'm giving it to Khan and Magni. They are my godsons and closest to my heart."
"What about your daughters?"
He chuckled.
"This isn't the Motherlands, dear. Women don't own valuables here. They are a valuable. I suppose I could give it to their husbands, but to be honest, I don't like them much."
Pearl closed her eyes, and euphoria rose in my chest. "Come on, Pearl, come on," I silently cheered, picturing her verbal claws just under her skin.
"May I ask why women aren't allowed to own anything?" Pearl asked, and this time the softness in her tone lessened.
"Because we don't want women to be independent of their husbands, of course," I said, and arched a brow meant to make my angel fall.
Pearl's nostrils expanded as she took a long, deep breath.
"It's all good," Zobel said in a jovial manner. "My daughters lack for nothing. Their husbands may be dim-witted, but they're rich as fuck." He laughed at his own joke, and I joined him just to provoke Pearl further.
"So, you're planning to sit on all these riches until you die, and then give it to two of the already richest men in the country, is that it?" Pearl asked with a calm but firm voice.
"Uh-huh,"
Zobel answered, and popped a large forkful of veal into his mouth. Pearl squirmed in her seat, and I was just waiting for her burning fuse to hit the explosives and go off.
"On our way here," she said, "we passed a town that had burned down."
"That's Larson's Creek,"
Zobel nodded enthusiastically and sipped from his wine glass.
"Poor fellows lost almost everything last year."
He held up his fork and pointed at us.
"Good thing they have me to provide them with jobs, or they would be completely lost."
She stared at him. "How many died?" Magni asked.
"More than half. It was very unfortunate," he muttered. "Now I have to recruit workers all the way from Old Waterloo."
"And what have you done to help the survivors?" Pearl asked.
Her fork and knife were on her plate, and she pushed it away as if she had lost her appetite.
"Done? What do you mean?" he shrugged. "I didn't start the fire. Why should I do something?"
She sucked in a breath as if it were going out of style, and turned pink from biting her tongue.
"What would you suggest Mr. Zobel should do?"
I asked her challengingly. "Remember, this isn't the Motherlands." I laughed to make the fuse burn faster, and it worked.
"And you wonder why some people conspire to overthrow you," she said. "Don't you see that you can never live a truly fulfilled life in your castles until no man is hungry on the streets?"
"I'm sorry to burst your bubble, dear," Mr. Zobel laughed, "but I'm quite content."
"That might be, but contentment and fulfillment are two different things. You live a shallow life and measure your worth in how much you can accumulate for yourself. Fulfillment isn't staying in a golden castle full of security guards to protect you from being robbed. Don't you see that all this stuff," she waved her hands around, "is what is truly robbing you? You have lost your freedom, and even worse, your humanity."
"My humanity?"
He scrunched up his face, and my mother shot Pearl a displeased look.
"Yes, people are suffering, and you have the means to help them, yet you won't. If only you knew that helping others would be the fastest way to help yourself."
"Nonsense," Mr. Zobel frowned at me. "What a peculiar thing to say. I create workplaces, and that is plenty of good deeds for one man."
"I dare you," she said, and stood up, "to come with me right now and feed the hungry men. I guarantee you'll feel a deep satisfaction seeing their smiles as they fill their bellies."
Zobel's eyes flickered between Magni, Finn, and me, probably waiting for one of us to reveal that Pearl was part of a prank.
"I don't have time to go there. It's so very far," Zobel said when no one offered him a way out.
"Then give me the food and I shall hand it out for you," she offered with fire in her eyes.
My heart was beating fast as I watched her come back to life after hiding from me all day. Yes, this was the woman I craved and lusted after.
"Is she out of her mind?"
Zobel asked me, with deep frown lines on his forehead.
"An unmarried woman couldn't possibly survive walking into a town like that. They would rape her for the fun of it."
I opened my mouth to speak when Finn cut me off. "That's not happening," he said, and for once his humor was gone.
"If this truly means so much to you, Pearl, then Magni and I will hand out food while you stay protected in the drone."
He looked at Zobel. "If you'll sponsor some food that we can take with us."
He stole my line. Finn fucking stole my line.
Thank you, Pearl told Finn, her voice softer again. I would appreciate that very much.
Pushing my chair out from the table, I walked out, furious that my carefully orchestrated plan had been sabotaged once again.
Chapter 14. Heartless Creatures. Pearl. The door slammed shut after Khan, and Zobel gave a small jump in his seat.
Really, if giving out food is against Lord Khan's wishes, he started. That's not it.
Magni frowned.
Are you sure? Because he seemed very upset about it, and I don't want to get in trouble with him.
Zobel's eyes flickered between Finn, Magni, and back to the door where Khan had just walked out.
I said that's not fucking it.
Magni threw his napkin on the table before he got up and followed his brother. Let's stick to the plan then, I said, and gave Finn an encouraging smile. Finn got up from the table too.
I'm sorry, Mr. Zobel, but I have a feeling Lord Khan wishes to return home. Would you mind having your servants pack up food to hand out in the village?
Yes, of course.
Zobel snapped a finger, and a uniformed servant came to stand next to him, listening to instructions about the food that the kitchen staff were to pack up in boxes and bring to the drones.
What a shame that you have to leave now, Erica said, and Zobel agreed.
It's so rare that you come to visit. We'll be back soon.
Finn placed a hand on the old man's shoulder and smiled. In the meantime, I said and cleared my throat, may I suggest something, Mr. Zobel? He nodded vaguely. Why not honor your son by adopting that village and making it the most thriving one in the country? Before he had a chance to shoot me down, I continued, You tragically lost your son, but there's a whole village of young men looking for a future. You have the means to rebuild that village and leave behind a legacy that will have people remembering your family for generations. He looked taken aback by the idea. Let me tell you a story, I said and leaned in. Hundreds of years ago, when oil and steel revolutionized the Western world, two men competed fiercely to be the richest. One was a Scotsman called Andrew Carnegie, and the other an American called John D. Rockefeller.
Yes, I know who they are,
Zobel said with self-importance. But did you know that once they became old men, their competition changed into who could leave the biggest legacy? I added. They poured money into libraries, concert halls, universities, and other kinds of philanthropy that would make their names go down in history.
I didn't know that.
Zobel looked thoughtful, and his initial resistance softened into a small smile. If they were here, I think they would advise you to think about your legacy, I said. You can have an opportunity to make the whole country envious of your power, to take the poorest town in the Northlands, and make it a place of hope and prosperity. Not many men could do it, but I believe you can. Zobel took the praise and turned in his chair to look at Finn.
What do you think?
He asked.
I think it's a fucking brilliant idea.
Finn broke into a charming smile.
If you rebuild the town, you could attract workers to come live here. What an intriguing thought, to adopt a whole village,
Zobel said as if tasting the idea. You could rename the town after your son Peter if you wish to, or use your own name if you prefer, I suggested.
Yes, I like it. I could name it Zobel or Zobel's Legacy.
As he spoke, he painted the name in the thin air.
Erica, dear, which do you prefer?
She gave it some thought. I like Peter's town, she said.
Yes, but Zobel's Legacy has a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
It was funny to see the old man sit up straighter, stroking his chin in deep thought.
Will you remember to tell the villagers that the food came from me?
He asked Finn.
Absolutely. Or you could just have your servants take it directly. If you want, I know a contractor who can rebuild the town for you. Is he an honest man?
Yes.
Good, because I once had an assistant who stole from me.
Zobel squeezed his eyes almost shut.
I cut both his hands off.
But how did he survive without his hands? I asked, horrified. Zobel lowered his brows and looked at me as if I was missing the obvious.
He didn't survive.
Pointing to his wrist, he started explaining,
It's an effective way to kill someone. You see, the blood pumps out extremely fast once you cut the main artery. It's quite messy, so you really should consider where you do it. I know my servants prefer that I do it outside because blood is sticky and it sprays far when you chop.
I held up my hand, feeling close to losing my lunch. I understand. No need to explain further.
Excuse me, Erica said. I would like to go and see if Lord Khan is all right. Yes, of course.
Mr. Zobel stood up and excused himself to follow Erica out of the room. When Finn and I were alone, he looked at me.
You are incredible, you know that?
His tongue played at the edge of his slightly open mouth, and he gave me a boyish grin.
You get men to do your bidding all the time, don't you?
I didn't look away, but I didn't answer either.
No one is dying tonight, you say, and poof. Fighting men split apart and listen to all your words. We should feed the hungry and rebuild their houses, you say, and poof. Zobel acts like a hypnotized puppet ready to open his treasure chest for the first time in decades.
Finn angled his head.
It's fascinating to watch, really.
I think you overestimate my powers, Mr. Finn, I said softly, but that only made him chuckle.
Do you?
Yes.
I can't help wondering what words you used with Khan.
Finn crossed his arms and looked thoughtful.
My friend hasn't been himself all day. What happened between you two last night?
I'm sure he'll tell you if he wishes you to know, I said calmly. Finn's face fell and he leaned in.
Did you curse him?
No, I didn't curse him. The thought was absurd.
Good.
He leaned back again, nodding with satisfaction.
Then maybe he's just fed up having to babysit you.
Babysit me? I'm his hostage, I defended myself. Finn shook his head.
I'm not so sure. Sometimes Khan looks like he's the hostage. Something isn't right between you two. Is it one of those curses that takes effect if he asks for help?
He gave me a suspicious glance. Look, I didn't curse him, and the only thing that isn't right is Khan's being okay with sitting in this perversely golden room feasting on babies. I pointed to the veal meat. As all the while, people are starving not far from here. I can't fathom why he's unwilling to lift a finger to help them. Finn lowered both hands to the back of the chair in front of him.
You have no idea what you're talking about, he said. Khan and Magni worked tirelessly to improve the quality of life for everyone in the Northlands. People used to be homeless because of all the wars, but now there are housing projects allowing destitute people to bounce back from hard times. There are hospitals that do pro bono work, and in case he didn't tell you, there's a way for women to report their men if they're being mistreated.
No, he didn't tell me.
Then maybe he didn't tell you that he raised the age of brides from 15 to 18 either.
15?
Yes, Pearl, 15. That was one of the first things Khan did after his father passed away 3 years ago. There was a rebellion because of it, but Magni challenged the leader to an honor fight.
What's an honor fight?
No weapons. No rules except that the survivor wins.
Magni killed the man?
Yes, with his bare hands,
Finn said, clearly impressed.
Magni is the most superior warrior in the Northlands. Well, the world, probably, since you people don't fight much, do you?
No, I said, as if the idea alone offended me. Some do martial arts for sport, but never to hurt another human being. Finn shrugged.
Magni used to be as respected as Khan, before...
We both knew he was referring to Laura's leaving Magni, but I didn't want to go there. But 18 is still young for a bride, I commented.
No, it's not. At 18, a woman is ripe and fertile.
Finn declared matter-of-factly, and raised a glass of wine from the table, tilting his head back and emptying it.
It's a damn shame that your eggs dried out instead of your giving birth to a few beautiful blonde girls yourself.
He broke into another charming smile, and I got the feeling Finn was generally a happy person, able to bounce back from heavy topics with a quick smile. How do you know my eggs are dried out? I asked.
Because women lose their fertility faster than men?
True, but I'm 33, not 43.
All I'm saying is that had you been one of ours, you would have been married and had 3 or 4 kids by now.
But I'm not one of yours, I pointed out. I'm a woman with a profession and free will who doesn't have to let any man control me.
Like I said.
Finn shook his head and grinned.
A damn shame.
Magni appeared in the doorway.
Time to go,
he said. And as we walked to the drones, he pointed to Finn.
Change of plans. Zobel is sending his own men to feed the hungry, so we're going straight home.
Home? But I thought we were staying one more night, Finn said.
As I said, change of plans.
Got it.
Finn.
Magni stopped him with a hand on his shoulder.
The councilwoman rides with you.
Why? I asked, but got no answer. I searched for Khan and saw him talking to Zobel by the other drone. His eyes met mine for a fleeting second, and there was a coldness to him that was new.
That's fine, Finn said. I'll connect my drone to yours and we'll talk when we're back at the Grey Manor.
Magni was about to walk away when Finn grabbed his arm and whispered what I wasn't supposed to hear.
Does Khan want me to be your protector?
I looked down when Magni's eyes flew to me.
I'm not sure. We'll talk back at the manor.
He ordered and walked off. With only two passengers in the large drone, there was room to lie back in the seats and rest. I was quiet and trying to digest everything that had happened since yesterday morning when we'd left the West Coast. But after 20 minutes, Finn turned to me, placing his hands behind his neck and grinning slightly.
So, about that thing you said at the bar. You know, about getting rid of the border. When do you think it'll happen?
His open expression was one of hope, and I smiled a little at his endearing energy. Sure, Finn was an N-man and raised as a primitive ogre like the rest of them, but he was different somehow. Maybe because he was the smallest and least buff of them all, which didn't say much because he was still huge. Finn, how tall are you? I asked.
I'm 6'3". Why?
What's that in meters? I asked, since their outdated system of feet and inches meant nothing to me.
1 meter and 92 centimeters.
And how old are you? His grin slowly spread wider and his eyes became hooded in a seductive way.
I'm honored that you take such interest in me. Do I turn you on?
He wiggled his eyebrows suggestively. What are you doing? I asked, pointing to his eyebrows.
I saw it in a movie. It's supposed to excite women.
He did it again, humor sparkling in his eyes.
Does it excite you?
That's a definite no, I laughed.
Then how about this?
He sat up and rolled his sleeve up, flexing his large muscles. Ew, no. I shoved at him, but he just laughed louder. I'm not some woman from the 22nd century drooling over muscles.
Damn,
he muttered with mock disappointment.
What if I told you I am way above average down there?
He looked at his crotch. I shook my head. Nope, doesn't excite me either.
So how do I make you crazy for me?
You don't, I said, and you can stop flirting now.
Why? I like flirting,
he said and winked at me. What's wrong with your eye? I was grinning now because Finn was so playful, and despite the fact that he was clearly coming on to me, I felt safe with him. What are you doing? I asked when his hand snaked slowly toward me.
There's this one thing that I've seen in movies, and I want to try it so bad, he pleaded.
I'm not sleeping with you, I said quickly.
That's not what I wanted, but I wouldn't say no or anything.
He paused, giving me a chance to regret my refusal. No, I repeated.
Right,
he said and shrugged.
But I want to see if women really squeal when you tickle them.
I hate being tickled, I said. But he still came closer, grinning from ear to ear, and before I knew it, I was squealing like a pig while Finn was roaring with laughter and tickling me mercilessly. Stop, stop! I squealed in between fits of laughter and felt like a kid again. It was the sound of his wristband beeping that made him stop, and out of breath he pressed to be connected to Magni. Magni's image popped up, half of Khan's head visible too.
Yeah?
Finn said.
What's wrong?
Magni frowned.
Finn, why are you out of breath like that? It's nothing. We were just talking. See? Pearl is fine.
He turned his wristband to me and I knew they would see my flushed cheeks.
Did he touch you?
Khan's voice came directly to me. No, nothing happened. We were just trying to see who could hold our breath the longest, I said, and felt disturbed at how easy that lie came to me.
That's stupid,
Magni commented.
Finn?
Khan's voice was low and threatening.
If you touch her, I'll be more than happy to make sure you win that bet, because I'll fucking strangle you with my bare hands, do you understand? Understood, Finn said seriously. I won't touch her. We'll check up on you again later.
Magni ended the call. A long whistle came from Finn.
Fuck, someone is possessive.
I'm his precious hostage, that's all.
Yeah, but for all it's worth, thank you for saving my ass with that lie.
You're welcome. Finn didn't touch me after that, and he didn't flirt with me either. Instead, he closed his eyes and fell asleep, while I lay awake watching the sunset and overthinking Khan's mixed signals. When the next call came from the other drone, I accepted the call without waking up Finn. This time it was Khan. Finn is sleeping, I explained, knowing they wouldn't be able to see my face.
Are you okay?
Khan asked. Yeah, I'm fine. How long before we're back?
About an hour.
Khan sounded tired. Okay, I'll just get some sleep too then.
Fine.
He went quiet and I thought he had ended the call when his image disappeared. But then Magni spoke.
You're worried she likes Finn more?
No,
Khan said. I was about to speak up and tell them the speaker was still on, but something held me back.
Are you going to let Finn take over as her protector?
Depends. Can I trust you to leave her alone?
What do you mean? The only reason I've been protecting her to begin with was to make sure you didn't torture her to death hoping to get answers about Laura's whereabouts.
Wise choice. Although I would still like to ask her some questions. I told you to stay away.
And I have, haven't I?
There was a long pause before Magni spoke again.
I'm better now, you know.
Yeah, I've noticed.
You could let Finn take her off your hands.
Khan exhaled loudly.
I'm considering it. I don't think you have a choice. You're getting too fucking attached, I can see it.
Attached?
Khan snorted.
You're wrong. I can't stand to look at her right now.
I'm warning you, man. You need to protect yourself or she'll bring you down.
I'm fine.
Khan insisted dismissively.
If it's not her, then what is going on? You've been irritable and moody all day.
Khan didn't answer.
Did you have sex with her?
Again, there was no answer.
Oh, jeez. You did, didn't you? And now she rejects you. Women are fucking heartless creatures. Their pussies are like thorn bushes with honey on them. Guaranteed pain, but too sweet to resist.
I was gaping and wanting to end the call. I didn't want to eavesdrop, but I was afraid of touching anything, since Finn's wristband was a different model than mine.
What the hell am I gonna do?
Khan's voice sounded sad and defeated, and my heart twisted in pain.
Get rid of her. And let Finn sleep next to her?
Yes. Let the poor fucker suffer so you don't have to. How long did it take you to get her to sleep with you?
2 months.
So you think she's going to give it up easily to someone else?
Depends. If it's Archer, yeah, probably.
Who, that pretty boy who mentors?
Uh-huh. Women like him for some reason.
Khan said.
I suppose he does have nice eyes. And he's in excellent shape, too. Thanks for pointing that out. I feel a lot better now.
Khan growled.
Ah, come on. If Pearl wants a young boy like him, she doesn't deserve you anyway. You're the fucking alpha wolf, and she goes for a puppy. Let her.
He's 28. That's only a year younger than you.
Really?
Magni sounded puzzled.
I thought he was younger. He looks younger.
Or maybe you've just aged 5 years in the few months since Laura left.
More like 10.
Magni groaned.
So what are you going to do?
I don't know. I wish I could talk to her about what happened. But it was so fucking awkward afterward and I just wish I could erase it.
You could send her back home.
But what about Laura then?
There was a deep sigh.
We both know they're never going to give her back to me. They don't think like we do. And I have no clue what Pearl is doing here when it's fucking obvious it's just a masquerade.
I've been thinking the same thing. She doesn't act like a timid hostage, does she?
A bitter laugh came from Magni.
Fuck no. She acts like she's indulging us in our little fantasy that we have any power over her, and that the moment she's tired of pretending, she'll just get up and walk out. The question is, would you let her?
What, walk out?
Yeah.
Khan took time before he answered.
I wish I knew a way to make her want to stay. Like I said,
You're getting too attached, and she's going to rip your heart out. Take it from me. Women are heartless creatures.
Their conversation ended, and eventually I drifted off to sleep, drained by a deep sadness that I was causing another human being pain. Maybe it was time for me to get up and walk out to find my inner balance again. More importantly, maybe Khan needed to regain his own balance.
Chapter 15 Rainbows Khan. When Pearl and I returned to the Grey Manor, she marched into my suite and went straight for the sofa. It was 1:30 in the morning, and I was too tired to talk to her about anything. Today, when we woke up, she pretended like nothing had happened between us. I was mad at Finn for having unwillingly sabotaged my attempt to win back some of her good opinion yesterday, and for playing with her on the way back here, if holding your breath could be called playing. I watched her closely, trying to predict her next move, but Pearl was good at hiding her emotions, and was back to being annoyingly polite with me. When she spoke to her mother, Councilwoman Isabel, I watched from my office, and their conversation left me suspicious and curious. Apparently her mother had a thing for rainbows, because several times since Pearl arrived here, Isabel had asked her if she had seen any.
"Did you get a chance to look over the list of children we spoke about?" Pearl asked.
"I did," Isabel said.
"Here's a list of 20 children that you can pick from, 4 boys and 16 girls." "Thank you. Also, the name of the boy we spoke of is included on the list. Willow's twin, remember?" "Yes, I remember. His name was Jeremy, but the N-Men renamed their boys, I've heard."
"Yes," Pearl nodded. "They have a theme of great warriors, monarchs, generals, and rulers of the past. Khan is named after Genghis Khan, and his brother is named Magni after a Norse god."
"Wow, that's something," Isabel smiled. "Sure puts a bit of pressure on a young person, doesn't it? Anyway, Mom, I saw a pretty rainbow when we were away."
Isabel stiffened and lowered her voice.
"A rainbow, you say?"
"Yes."
Pearl was conducting the virtual reality call from our suite, and I could tell someone was disturbing her when she turned around and spoke.
"Oh, hi, Christina. I'm just speaking to Councilwoman Isabel. Come in."
I couldn't see Christina, but I could hear her in the background.
"I'm sorry for barging in. I'm just so excited to tell you the good news."
I brought up the images from the surveillance cameras so I could see live pictures from the suite.
"What's the good news?" Pearl asked Christina. "Kaya said yes. She's on her way here for an interview with you and Khan."
Christina's voice was pitched high with excitement.
"Did you hear that, Mom?"
Pearl asked and turned back to Isabel.
"Yes, I heard, and that's good news."
Pearl smiled.
"I can't wait to meet Kaya Janae." "But what about the rainbow?"
Isabel asked with forced cheerfulness.
"Oh, did I say rainbow? Actually, I meant Northern Lights," Pearl stammered. "You saw the Northern Lights?"
"Yeah, I did,"
Pearl nodded.
"No rainbows, I'm afraid."
I leaned back, folding my arms in my office chair. I hadn't seen any Northern Lights. Rainbow has to be a code word, but for what? Releasing a deep breath, I had a good idea. But if I was right, I didn't like it one bit.
"Pearl, tell me all about it," I said and gestured for Christina to sit down. "Can we go to the park?" She looked around. "I always have a creepy feeling we're being watched in here." I turned my head and looked out the window where a heavy summer rain was pounding down. "Okay, so maybe we'll just stay here." Christina breathed and took a seat. "What did Kaya say?" I asked, sitting down too. "I told her that there's nothing to be afraid of, that she'd be absolutely protected, and that she would have a chance to change history. Was she resistant?" Christina tipped her head from side to side. "Not much. I mean, she had a lot of questions, but when I told her about Victoria Island and being close to me, that helped. She leaned forward. Kaya has concerns about being isolated on the island, which makes sense since she was raised in the city and she enjoys culture.
I see.
Yes. Christina flushed a bit red. She also had a funny question.
Oh?
She asked if she'll have access to a male sex bot. You know, if she's going to be here for 3 years.
Right.
I nodded and thought about it. Maybe we could arrange for her to have monthly trips back home or something, I mused, to satisfy her need for culture and for her personal well-being. Christina folded her upper lip between her teeth. I should have thought about that. That's a much better answer than mine.
What did you answer? I asked.
She smiled shyly. I just told her that there would be a few guys on the island, and one of them is super cute.
Archer?
She nodded. I'm sure he won't mind standing in for a sex bot once in a while. Her grin was innocent and careless, but I didn't find it funny.
That's out of the question, I said firmly.
Why? Because sex complicates things, and sometimes it can ruin everything. I didn't share with her that I was speaking from personal experience.
But...
No, Christina, don't encourage Kaya to have sex with Archer. They have to work closely together.
Okay, but there's still Max and the two rangers that she can pick from, Christina pointed out.
Who is Max again?
He's Boulder's personal assistant. He's not as cute as Archer, but nice enough in a non-threatening way, I suppose.
Christina. My voice was firm. Please stop fixing your friend up with N-men. She's here to do a job, not fall in love.
But if she did, maybe she would stay forever and she and I wouldn't have to part again.
That's a selfish thought, I said. You need to accept that you're an anomaly. The rest of us aren't attracted to N-men. Some of us need something a bit more civilized.
It was my brain speaking, the part of me that wanted things to be that way. And maybe if I let my brain be in control for a while, it would overshadow my rebellious heart that had wanted to crawl into Khan's bed last night and talk to him about the pain we both felt.
Christina looked down.
I'm sorry, she said. It's just that I don't see Boulder as a scary N-man anymore. If only you knew how funny he is. Not to mention caring, generous, and loving.
When will Kaya arrive? I asked with a soft smile to ease the abrupt change of subject.
Tomorrow, she said and brushed invisible dust off her pants.
Boulder suggested that you and Khan come to us. That way you can interview Kaya and we can all go and see the school again.
Christina lit up. You're going to freak out when you see the changes Boulder has made already. He knows I desperately want Kaya to say yes to the job, so he's trying to create miracles before tomorrow to impress her.
Good. I'll check with Khan.
Right.
Christina furrowed her brow.
Sometimes I forget that you can't just walk around and that you're actually here as a hostage.
Yes, it's limiting, but at least now he's not forcing me to sit in his office all day. I'm here in the suite most of the time, and the two guards outside the door make sure I don't go anywhere.
You don't get out at all?
Only when it pleases him. I'm a bit like a pet, I suppose. He walks me a few times a day to avoid my getting too restless. My mocking tone revealed that I wasn't happy about it. But we just went to the East Coast, and that was dramatic enough for a while.
What happened?
Some fighting and an up-close look at the poorest parts of the country.
That doesn't sound too pleasant.
Christina, can I ask you something? I said.
Sure.
Was it worth giving up the motherlands for Boulder? She looked down to her hands.
I'm not asking you to understand, but what I have with him is more special than anything.
Even your friends and family?
I miss them, she admitted. Kaya the most, and that's why the slight chance that she'll be living close to me again is making me want to dance. But the short answer to your question is, yes, Boulder is worth it.
You don't find him crude?
Of course I do, she laughed. But I've gotten used to it. And he is trying to cut back on the swearing.
That's good. Then I was right after all. Our very presence is changing the Northlands.
Chapter 16. Kaya. Khan. I went running with Magni that morning before we left for Boulder's Island.
Did you think about it? I asked him.
Yeah, I did, he said, each step in a perfect rhythm. Magni was a born athlete who made anything related to his body look easy.
Boulder says his island is safe, but I would feel better if you went over the security and maybe stayed for a while to protect the female teacher.
But Archer is there.
Exactly.
Magni shot me a sideways glance.
You worried he'll violate her?
I don't know him well enough to feel safe that he won't do something stupid. Besides, it's not only Archer I worry about. There's also the question of the other three single men on the island. The park rangers and Max, Boulder's assistant.
So, make Archer her protector. It's one solution, but Pearl doesn't like it, and she insists that we can't trick Kaya into marrying him.
It worked for Boulder, Magni said dryly.
Because Christina didn't understand what we were suggesting, she'll warn her friend for sure so it wouldn't work.
So, what do you want from me?
I want you to protect her.
When he gave me a questioning look, I quickly added, until Laura decides to come home, that is.
You want me to sleep in the teacher's bed?
Yes, if it were up to me. But Pearl says no.
Then how am I supposed to protect her if someone sneaks into her bed?
I'll leave that to you, but for now I just want you to meet her and see the school. Her name is Kaya Janae.
Kaya, that's Christina's roommate, isn't it? Magni asked, and I felt jealous that he wasn't even out of breath.
Yes, I've met her, he said, and that made me stop.
You've met her?
Yeah. Last time I went to the Motherlands.
And?
And she's really pretty in an exotic way.
What do you mean?
He squinted his eyes and looked thoughtful. She's got dark, creamy skin with large brown eyes, but not dark like yours. Hers is more like pale brown, almost, he thought about it, like a glass of beer.
Eyes like beer? I frowned.
Yeah, you know, that golden amber color beer can have when the sun shines on it.
Uh-huh.
I bent over, trying to catch my breath. And she's got really big lips and curly long hair with black roots and brown highlights like she's been in the sun a lot. I looked up at him from my bent-over position.
You really studied her, didn't you?
He shrugged. I would never touch her, but I would have to be blind to miss her exotic beauty.
So, you interested in protecting her?
Maybe.
He ran on. But I'm not sure, because I still have duties here that I need to think about, and I've been wanting to dedicate myself to a higher level of training.
All right, we'll figure something out, but I was thinking that maybe you could help Archer and train the children a few hours a week.
You mean teach them to fight?
He looked back at me and slowed his pace so I could catch up to him.
Yes.
Yeah, that could be fun. But what about the girls? You don't expect me to teach them, do you?
According to Pearl, the boys and girls should be treated equally, so yeah, you're going to teach the girls too.
We ran for a few more minutes in silence before Magni spoke again.
It's ironic, isn't it?
What?
That my wife left me to learn how to fight from some flimsy momsy boy, and now I'll be training little girls how to fight here.
Do you regret not teaching Laura when she asked you?
He didn't answer, and I didn't press him further. I was just happy that Magni was finally pulling out of his grief and rebuilding his life.
After our run, I took a shower and walked into my suite with a new mental clarity. Pearl had been ready to leave. I had no doubt that rainbows was her code word to the council that she was ready to come home. Maybe they would hold back one boy, 10, or possibly all of them until we returned Pearl. But in any case, keeping her here, knowing that they wouldn't return Laura, was pointless. Magni had accepted his loss, and it was time to end this farce. Pearl stood by the window looking out, and seemed deep in thought when I joined her and leaned against the door frame. "I think it's time for you to go home," I said calmly. She turned, with her eyes full of confusion. "The council isn't going to return, Laura, and Magni is finally accepting that she's gone."
"You want me to leave?"
she asked in a low, breathy voice. "No," I met her eyes. "I would like you to stay, of course, but you're no longer a hostage."
"But the school project,
what about it?" I locked my eyes with hers, curious to see what she would do now. Creasing her forehead, she gestured with her hands.
"Well, for one, there's the interview with Kaya today, and the selection of the children."
"You're free to stay as long as you like," I said, and moved away from her. As I'd predicted, she followed me.
"And if I go, can I come back and check up on the school project?"
I turned, and she almost crashed into me, making me grab her by her forearms to steady her. "Pearl, you know you can come back if you wish to."
"What is going on?"
she asked, and looked up at me as if trying to read my mind.
"Why are you doing this?"
"Because it's the right thing to do."
"You're letting me go."
"Uh-huh." I released her. "Magni and I will be going to Boulder's house for the interview at 4 o'clock. If you want, I can take you back to the border before that."
"Before the interview? Are you forgetting that I have a say in this too?"
"No, I just thought you would want to leave for the border the moment I said that you could."
"Well, you were wrong then." She squared her shoulders. "I'm staying for the interview, and then maybe you can take me to the border tomorrow."
"Fine, but as I said, you're welcome to stay as long as you'd like." Pearl looked completely baffled when I left her, and quietly closed the door behind me.
Pearl. Khan had made a surprise move and released me. I was no longer an official hostage, and in many ways that only complicated my world. As a hostage, I had focused on finding ways to lift the men into a new awareness and create change that could eventually lead to a union between our countries. As a hostage, I had been limited in my options, and dedicating myself to this project had made complete sense, since there wasn't much else I could do. But if I wasn't a hostage, then I should go back and focus on my work for my own people. There were plenty of projects that needed my attention right now, and realistically speaking, uniting the Motherlands and the Northlands was a distant vision at best. But the school project had potential, and I was invested in it. I wouldn't just run and let it fall to the ground without ever getting a chance to work. No, the school project would be the testimony that my months in the Northlands had made a difference. We would plant the seeds with the children and see them grow into beautiful, strong ambassadors who could continue the progress. But no seed could grow without the right conditions, and I needed to personally make sure everything was right before I left and had to rely on periodic inspections. At 4 p.m, we parked in front of Boulder's large estate. Magni and Khan jumped down, and Boulder came rushing to help me. For a second, Khan looked back, as if only realizing that I might need help with the large step down from the vehicle. And then he frowned at Boulder, as if annoyed that Boulder had thought of it before he did.
"The girls are inside,"
Boulder said, but corrected himself quickly.
"I meant Kaya and Christina are inside."
Personally, I didn't blame him for calling them girls with the way they sat glued together, giggling in the white windowsill. They were too preoccupied with their reunion to notice us come in, and didn't look up until Khan cleared his throat loudly. Kaya was a pretty woman. It was rare to know who your father was, or even what he looked like, as our non-discrimination policy didn't allow mothers to pick a favorite skin color, height, or hair color when getting impregnated. Any child would be loved, and no race was pure anymore anyway. Still, Kaya was an example of a woman carrying clear African-American genes. Her magnificent curly hair and large lips, combined with her gorgeous caramel skin color, gave it away. My lips were thin compared to hers, and my hair was always straight and boring. But I shouldn't complain. Blondes were rare, too, and we all had a unique beauty. Kaya stood up and stretched out her hands to me. Brown caramel met creamy white, and I said, "May peace surround you." "Councilwoman Pearl." Kaya's voice was deep and pleasant. "I'm so honored to meet you." "And I you, my dear." Her energy was warm, and I sensed kindness in her. "May I present Lord Khan, ruler of the Northlands?" Khan nodded at her and rudely slid his hands into his pockets, clearly signaling that he wasn't interested in the formal greeting. I narrowed my eyes at his bad manners and moved on to introduce Magni, who'd entered the room just then. Kaya's eyes expanded in recognition, and a smile spread on her lips. "I remember you," she said and walked over to stand in front of Magni, reaching out both her hands. Magni was polite enough to take her hands, but he failed to keep eye contact for the full 10 seconds before he looked away. "Can I talk to you?" I asked Khan with a stiff smile.
"Sure,"
he said, and led me to a different room, closing the door behind us. "How do you want to do this?" I asked, trying to get a reading on him.
"Do what?"
"The interview. Remember, with Archer, I got to ask the questions. Maybe you want to ask the questions this time?" I offered.
"Okay."
He shrugged noncommittally. "If you're not sure we should go through with this project, then now is the time to say it," I told him. Khan straightened up.
"No, I'm sure."
"Really? Because you don't seem very passionate about it."
"I am."
He gave me a stern look. "Then why were you so rude to Kaya, like it was beneath you to greet her?" Khan once again buried his hands in his pockets and looked away, his golden eyes turning dark and stormy. "Is that it? You have no excuse for your rude behavior?" I asked.
"She is beneath me."
His words were rude, but the fact that he didn't want to meet my eyes made me suspect he wasn't telling the truth. "Really? That's your reason?" He swung his head to me.
"I don't need to explain myself to you, nor do I need to apologize for how I treat guests in my country."
Throwing my hands in the air, I gave him one last hard stare. "When I arrived, you greeted me, remember?"
"You were a council member. That was different. You were almost my equal."
"Almost? What is that supposed to mean?"
"I'm the sole ruler of 10 million men. You were my hostage,"
he said in a clipped manner. I laughed. "Try dividing 1.5 billion people by 101 councilwomen, and you'll see that you're outnumbered if we're measuring the number of people we serve."
"Serve?"
he scoffed. "You're deliberately trying to pick a fight with me, and I don't know why," I said in frustration. When he didn't answer, I turned to leave and was by the door when he spoke up.
"Your custom of holding hands and staring into each other's eyes,"
he trailed off. "Yes, what about it?" I asked, looking back at him.
"The truth is," he breathed, "it feels strange and intimate to me, and the only woman..."
He paused again and looked away as if regretting his words. I walked back, waiting for him to continue. "The only woman you what?" He frowned.
"Never mind. You wouldn't understand."
"Tell me anyway," I pressed.
"We men of the North."
Khan's Adam's apple bobbed.
"We're different from you."
He pulled his hands from his pockets and crossed his arms.
"You go to sex clubs and have casual sex partners. We don't."
Khan looked partly pissed and partly pained as he shifted his balance.
"The highest praise for us is to marry and be blessed with a woman in our life. One woman, Pearl."
I didn't speak, but my mind was analyzing and trying to make sense of what he was saying. Was he still upset that I hadn't been a virgin? That was just ridiculous.
"Look, tomorrow you'll be gone, so maybe it doesn't matter if you know."
"Know what?" My heart was pounding in my chest.
"That I wasn't trying to intentionally be rude to Kaya. I just..."
His tongue flicked out to wet his lips.
"Well, the only woman I feel comfortable with holding my hands and staring into my eyes is you, Pearl."
I took a step back and swallowed hard. "But you said that you'd prefer a sex bot over me." He closed his eyes, rubbing the bridge of his nose.
"Yeah, but I say a lot of stupid shit.
What about the part about my being stiff as a board?
Another perfect example.
Khan muttered softly. My eyes were flickering around as too many thoughts fought for my attention.